This is the song?
Yes.
Eddie and I love it.
I can see you guys on the boat with this.
Song is amazing. Why do they want to stop this? If this is the wave.
If they're stopping it.
Oh, they're stopping it.
For sure.
They don't want the fans.
Okay. Who doesn't want the fans? It's right up your alley. Well, you just have to go.
By the way, I'm against any man with the fans. The fans aren't for the men, it's for the women. But when the women dance, especially down south, it's attractive.
With the fan.
Oh.
Snapping the fan.
Yeah, the men, this dance, there's certain dance that aren't for men. This is one of these songs. Like Single Ladies by Beyonce?
Yes.
Not for men. This song where them fans at, these are for the ladies. But if you're an outsider, if you're a man watching the view, it's a great view.
You like line dancing?
Do I like line dancing?
Well, I mean, is that for men?
I mean, I guess. I don't know.
It could be.
It could be.
It's definitely for men, line dancing, like in these areas where they love country music. Definitely.
It's a big thing.
Man line dancing.
Yeah. But so there's certain songs out there that's just for the men, not for the men. But my point is, don't take it away.
I understand. You're going to have to change your cruise ship. That's all. Are you a cruiser yourself?
I tell you what won me over was the Disney cruise this year. Okay. I took. It was absolutely phenomenal. That damn mouse knows how to throw a cruise.
Yes, they do.
It was breathtaking. I thought I was going to hate it. I thought it was going to be a bunch of little kids crying and whining, which it was. But the experience and the service was classic.
Yeah, we did that like 9, 10 years ago. It really was a good time.
And they beat you over the head with food.
Yes.
Like I mean, they just pound you with food. So just nothing like...
What do you think the average amount of weight a cruise vacationer gains in a week? Whether it's Disney cruise, Carnival, Royal, it doesn't matter. There's not many people walking off that cruise that don't gain weight.
Man, I was on a beach slapping down a couple ribs. And so I know I packed on 20.
20?
Yeah.
You did not gain 20 pounds.
They had this 24-hour ice cream machine.
Oh, I know. And pizza usually.
Yeah. And they had this mango ice cream. Me and my mother-in-law were passing each other like ships in the night, 2 o'clock in the morning.
2 o'clock.
Because she would leave her room, go get some ice cream. And as I was sneaking up as the kids fell asleep, I would go upstairs. I'm like, I want something sweet. So I would take my big, big butt up there. and I would be walking away with a 2-scooper. Going down the elevator with some fresh mango ice cream. It was brilliant. I loved it.
It's way too much.
It's a lot. My point is you get your money's worth. And the characters walk around.
Oh, yeah. They're everywhere. You're in the elevator with them.
Yeah, you turn the corner, they go Jafar having a conversation. Then you go down the stairs, then it goes like Tiana. Then you go upstairs, Cinderella's, and one of the doors will walk by. So it was cool. I loved the trip.
My only complaint with the cruise ships, the pools are way too, and I know it's a boat, it can only be so big. They're way too small.
The pools?
Yeah. The pools are not big enough.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention to the pools. I mean, it was nice for what it was. My son fell in love with the, there was a water, like the little water
slide.
Yeah. He was coked out on that thing.
I'm sure.
Yeah, he can.
Up, down.
Yeah, my son is addicted to water parks. If I ever found the water park that goes for 24 hours, he would.
You would lose him.
Oh, yeah. He would never go home. Yeah, he's that type of kid. So.
All right, it's Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo, Built Ford Tough Studio. Hour number 3. Coming up in a little while, Jeff Ross, the comedian, is going to be in studio. He's got a new one-man show coming to Broadway, so we're going to get into a lot with him. We've got a few minutes here, so we could talk about Mike Brown, but it was boring. It was fine. More so, since we've been heavy on the football this morning.
Yes, sir.
So a couple of odd things.
Which is good. We need more football. It's about that time. Training camp's coming around.
Thank you.
I saw a comment. There's some guy who's like, oh, Willie's too football-centric. Well, I wasn't a golfer, right? I wasn't a professional golfer.
No, you were not.
I also didn't play, I wasn't on a horse. I was a polo player.
Football also dominates now. And football if it's not 12 months out of the year, it's 11. Like this, I would say, mid-June to mid-July is really the only down period for football. Really, if you think about it, with all the mini camps and rookie camps.
Jared,
and the draft,
we're about 2 or 3 weeks out from
the a few days out from the Chargers reporting.
Correct.
So that's why I say mid-July. Like, you've got teams, I think the Cowboys report July 20th or 21st. The Giants are right around that area.
A lot of people
are
the 22nd, which is that Monday, I think.
So we're talking literally in a week or two.
Yes, sir.
That these guys are going to be on the field. And I'm not going to get into this guy's name because it's not important enough. But the notion that's been out there, and I only bring it up because there have been headlines written about it. And you guys, we kind of talked about it briefly earlier with the Patrick Mahomes
dead
photograph.
Yeah. Which is dumb.
It's Like, if you wanted to tell me that that was some starting quarterback for a team that hasn't made the playoffs in the last 9 years.
Did you say that's the problem?
And, right. I get it. You could say you're not, you know, you're not committed. You're not working out. You know, you look soft. But for anybody to actually criticize especially when we have seen what Tom Brady did in his career, and he was never chiseled out of a rock like Cam Newton was, as you point out, to see what Patrick Mahomes has done in his career, for anybody to criticize him, I'm sorry, it makes no sense. To me, it's just speaking to get clicks. It makes zero sense.
I mean, Jerry, that's all it is. There's no way you can look at Patrick Mahomes and feel like he's the problem in anything that's going on with Kansas City right now. You could blame an aging Travis Kelce. You could blame a defense that's maybe taking a step back, or you can even blame the performance and how they played in the Super Bowl against the Eagles. But bet your bottom dollar, Patrick Mahomes is going to be who he needs to be when the time matters most on the football field.
Couldn't you also make the case, and you talked about Ben, who never had that physique either.
Right.
Couldn't you also make the case that having a body like that is beneficial in this day and age where guys are getting all sorts of injuries?
Well, no,
and
there's a such thing called brown fat. Brown fat is what keeps you warm in the winter. Patrick Mahomes plays in one of the coldest cities in America. He needs that brown fat to keep him going.
So you think it could be by design almost?
It would be for me.
Yeah.
I mean, my fat is just fat, but it's just my point is, like, the guy's a stud. You don't question a guy like him and his commitment to the game, the way he performs week out and week in.
Right,
week
it's
out.
Not like he's not working out.
No,
we know he is. It's just, and I don't even like talking about this because of how good he is and how good he's been.
But to your point, you being a Cowboys fan, people have been in awe of Dak Prescott. His physique, like, he lost weight, he looks chiseled, he looks lean. God hasn't done much.
Has not won as much as Patrick Mahomes,
correct.
I can tell you that.
And Dak has been on record saying he feels like he's in the best shape of his career coming off this torn hamstring. So I think some guys, the look test matters, not with Patrick
Mahomes. No, not when you're as successful and it's not even that he's successful. He's a champion, and he is arguably the best player in the game that we've seen in a long time. And to me, it's like there are some guys that just get the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if you want to tell me next year we're in week 7 or week 8 and he has thrown in 8 games, he's got 17 interceptions, 6 touchdown passes, and the Chiefs are out to a 3-5 start, and you want to say, well, you know what, fair enough. But until that happens, you leave him alone.
For every coach out there, you want to see certain guys pass a look test when they report to training camp. I remember when I reported to training camp and we was going through our conditioning test, if you will. I remember Mike Tomlin going, "Hey Willie, I can tell you've been working out. I can see your waist." And I was like, "Okay." But certain guys, you want to see the look test to see if they've been on their job, why they've been away from the team. Certain guys like Patrick Mahomes, you just want to make sure they didn't overwork themselves because they understand what they need to bring to the table for this team to be successful. And that's where I think a lot of these injuries are coming from. I think a lot of these guys are overworking themselves in the offseason. They're going down to these camps and they're running these hills and they're going to these specialists because they want to get bigger, faster, stronger, which is great. But when you're dealing with a potential 18-game season, from OTAs, take a break, training camp, all the way to potentially January – I mean, these guys are burnt out. That's why you're seeing after week 8, the injury list, some of these coaches can't fill a roster just from the volume of which these players are putting themselves through. So it's a weird dynamic.
So you bring up a very interesting point then. And I know, like, I get everything's about money. I'm not stupid. I totally understand. But why then, and I've got to take a break in a second.
No, go ahead.
Why then, if it's to the detriment of the team, of the league and the play.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess money is the simple answer. Why are we expanding the game?
I don't know. I mean, to your point, it's the money. But I think a lot of it is to when the NFL is trying to strike while the iron's hot. Think about it right now. So the Cowboys have 4 Thursday night games, right? On top of that, football has taken over Christmas. They have ripped Christmas away from basketball.
Yep.
Sports gambling can't be – I mean, it's huge right now. The game itself, and I mean football only, is in a position right now where we're consuming it all year round, to where the guys who have played, like the J.J. Watts, all these other guys who have, you know, had their time, they now have platforms that we want to hear from, like the Kelce's, the new Heist podcast. So guys who once played are bigger than ever solely from what they did in the yesteryears. And on top of that, the guys that are coming up, we're more enthralled. We spend half the show talking about a show on Netflix between three quarterbacks who aren't, by the way, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, or Lamar Jackson.
You're right.
But so I'm just telling you, the game is so huge right now. That's why it is what it is.
But we don't need 18 games to do that. Like, the game is huge. If you forget the 70, that's stupid, the odd number of games, but a 16-game schedule still did that. Like, that's what built this.
I agree. When I played, we were squeaking into the playoffs because we just beat up. And the brand of football we were demanded to play, being the most physical team on the field, it wears on you. That's why, look at the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions didn't go through those injuries solely because of the brand of football they play. They can't keep up. And these guys get older.
Yeah.
And you can only play through so many injuries. You know, I think the playoff game against the Commanders this postseason, I think they had 18 guys on the injury list.
That's not even the same team you saw for much of the
season.
And
the guys they rolled out on the field were practice squad guys. So that's just...
But that's problematic to me.
100%.
And that's the whole point. Like, the game, as great as it is, and we all absolutely love it, we've sat here and talked about September is now the preseason. The games stink. They're sloppy. They don't hit stride till October.
That's indicative to how training camp is right now. Training camp now is like it's a resort.
Add it all up, and you end up with a product that's not as good as it could be. That's my point. And I know money's the answer, but you sit there and say, "Why?"
I just don't know how they dial it back now because it's so back.
There's
it's
too much
so
money
big. Excuse me.
And yet, to me, the product is not as good. And then when you have teams like the Lions that are basically a mash unit at the end, that sucks for everybody involved.
I agree.
In my opinion, anyway. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll either have CeeLo or Jeff Ross. We've got a lot to do. It's Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on The Fan and CBS Sports Network.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, 8:25. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo, coming to you live from the Built Ford Tough studio. The guys will be back next week as they're on vacation. And joining us now in studio is a man who everybody knows if you like comedy. And he's got a one-man show coming to Broadway starting August 5th. It's called Take a Banana for the Ride at the Nederlander Theater. Am I saying that right?
Yes, legendary 103-year-old Broadway theater.
Look at that. And that voice is none other than Jeff Ross. Jeff, thank you very much for coming in. How are we doing?
Great to be here with the subs.
By the way, anytime we ask for guests, I always tell Al, our producer, make sure they know that Boomer's not here and Geo's not here.
You know what? It's fine. I love playing with the injured list.
It's about right.
Let's get these guys off the bench.
I know. We do look like a cop duo, right? Like the typical sitcom cop duo.
I would tell you, though, you are sitting in the studio with a Super Bowl champion.
Oh, I'm well aware.
So, thank you.
We've got that at least.
I'm well aware. I feel sorry for that stool he's sitting on. Stool's going to need a replacement next week.
I said to him, he looks like my father. I feel like a child sitting next to him.
Because he's so robust.
Huge. Yes. Yeah. Robust is a good word.
You look great, Willie.
Thank you.
You make me feel small.
I don't know how to receive that because you had a banana on your chest.
You know, I'm always representing.
And that is the name of the show. So before we get to some other stuff, talk about the show. Like, how did this come about after the career you've had? Why did you want to do this and why now?
That's a good question. This is I was coming off the Tom Brady roast, and I just wanted to change things up. I'd been roast mode, and I had some time to think about it. I went in for a colonoscopy. I went in to see my shrink. I went to the dentist. Like, I was doing all the...
Did the car wash.
All that. Yes, I like that. I like that, champ. The car wash. I was taking care of myself, and I was coming off losing three good buddies within 8 months. Mm. Three comedy legends, Bob Saget, Norm MacDonald, and Gilbert Gottfried, all passed away back to back to back. And it made me think about 30 years ago when I lost my grandfather and my parents. And I was like, wow, I still kind of think the same things that I thought then about loss and bouncing back. And I kind of said, well, I think maybe it's time to look back a little bit. I'm always looking forward. And I look back and realize that I had a lot of experience with this kind of stuff that I could share with people who might be going through some stuff. So I wrote a show that's like a cathartic experience for anybody going through loss or hardship. It's almost like a pep talk. Sometimes I feel like a coach up there, but yet it's like blistering funny, and I roast people, and I roast myself, and the audience gets involved. And so it's kind of a fun night out wrapped around some tough experiences. And it just felt like the next thing to do to keep my, you know how it is, you got to keep your audience guessing and surprised. So
yeah.
It's called Take a Banana for the Ride.
And that comes from your grandfather, if I heard you say that correctly, right?
This is my grandfather's ring. It's a bolt from a Nazi submarine from World War II. He was in the he was a shipbuilder in Baltimore, and the U.S. Navy somehow captured a Nazi sub, turned the whole war around. They dragged it back to America. My Pop Jack was in the crew that worked on it. He pulled this bolt off, sanded it down, made a ring out of it. Damn. And we lived together during my open mic days here in New York. And whatever, I need a little pep talk. I tapped this ring on something, and my grandfather, I would take him to his doctor appointments all day, and at night I'd go into New York and do open mics, and he'd always give me money for the bus and a banana.
And that's where it comes from.
Take a banana for the ride. I'm like, Pop, I don't need a banana. He's like, potassium could save your life. You get stuck in traffic. And it was his way of saying, I can't go with you, but I'm on the trip with you in spirit. And also, anything can happen in life. And it's a good message to remember.
Well, the question is, how much preparation goes into this? Because I know you said it's cathartic, so I guess you're just talking from the heart and from experience. But it's not easy being vulnerable, especially, I mean, as a comic, that's kind of part of the gig.
Yeah.
But it's a different level because people kind of have pigeonholed you as being the roast guy.
Sure.
But now we're looking into the soul of the guy who's the king of the roast.
Appreciate that. Well, you know, I wouldn't get away with roasting people for 30 years if I didn't have a soul. Mm. I only roast the ones I love. This show is a chance to sort of keep the names alive of some of the people who made me who I am. And all the roasting comes from an affectionate, loving place. And people don't always realize that. They think it's bullying. They think it's mean. But the truth is, I go against the bullies. I fight against that kind of that stuff. I never make fun of people behind their back anymore. It's always to their face.
That's what real men should do, yeah. By the way.
Which is what real smack talk should be. I learned this playing high school football and doing karate tournaments as a kid. It all comes from sports. So that's what toughened me up as a kid. When I was 6 years old, I was getting bullied at school. I tell all these stories, a lot of these stories in the show. I was getting bullied, and I was living in Newark, New Jersey, and my mom was worried about me, so she dragged me to a karate class where all the kids took turns beating me up until I got tough and learned hard work and discipline. And 10 and a half years old, I became the second youngest black belt in New Jersey.
How about that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I see it in your eyes. It's hard to believe, but it's true.
No. Well, you're a bald guy with a bandana on your shirt. I think that was in your wheelhouse. Like, you know,
Taekwondo, baby.
That's and we've got Al inside. Now, Al is 56, and he has been telling me for at least 10 years that he wants to learn, like, jiu-jitsu. Or is he too old?
You're never too old to learn something
new. I
told you.
I don't want to put the work in, though. Like, I just wish I knew it already. Like, that I had
this
done
this.
This
is the Matrix. We can't plug you in somewhere, Al.
Yeah, like, it's not AI for karate, you know, K-A-I-R-T. But
like,
no.
You must feel very confident walking the streets. Like, if someone attacks you, you can take them down.
I always felt like I could defend myself and whoever I'm with.
Yeah, and I'm talking about confidence. I mean, a lot of people don't have that.
It gave me some swag at an early age. And I remember breaking up fights. People would pick on kids at school, and I remember stepping in. And I wasn't tough, but I was trained.
Mm.
And it's there. It's just there. Like, it's self. You know, the two self-defense mechanisms my parents left me with were martial arts and a sense of humor. And those two things can really protect you. And if you can laugh your way through life, you really can survive almost anything.
Is that, and we're talking with Jeff Ross, so previews begin Tuesday, August 5th, opening night, Monday, August 18th. It goes for 8 weeks. One-man show called Take the Banana for the Ride.
Yeah.
Tickets at jeffrossbroadway.com. Is that how you, I mean, you talk about the loss, it's a lot that you were talking about. Is that kind of what you pull from to kind of get through all these tough times?
You know, I pull from the happy memories. Like, I'm not one to drag feet or feel sorry for myself. Like, my grandfather, who I mentioned earlier, he never felt sorry for himself. And he outlived his wife and his daughter. And he was what he called world beater energy, that old school energy. And I try to channel that and remember the good stuff. And that's where I live, in those memories. Try to stay positive. I'm a very positive. Bob Saget was my dear pal.
I love that. I had the opportunity to interview him. He was shockingly refreshing.
Yeah.
In a weird way, because we just see him from Danny Tanner's Full House and all that nonsense. But he was a man's man.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't like this shrimpy tall guy. Like, he had everything you wanted. You know what I mean? He was a man's man. He could talk love. He was sensitive, but he was rough at the same time. I enjoyed him. I interviewed him during my time in Barstool. I want to ask you this, because I think you mentioned something. We live in a world where bullying is wrong.
Yeah.
But you live in a world where bullying is right how you make your living. Doing these roasts, and obviously you've done them all and all the big names, has there ever been a situation where somebody's come back and be like, that hurt, Ross?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's happening now. Tom Brady is definitely deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, that was the meanest roast in history.
Also one of the most popular ones.
And it was 2.5 billion viewing minutes on Netflix.
Yeah, it killed.
And it changed all the lives of the people involved in a good way. So sometimes the roast can go a little too far, and I think that's what people tune in for.
100%.
You know, I want to, like, scratch the skin, not break it. I want everyone to leave there going, that was the most fun. I want to do that again. I can't wait to see that again. Wait till my family wakes up tomorrow. I'm going to tell them all the jokes. Like, that's the win for me. That's what I love. That's why I've been able to do it for so long.
How different, though, now to it? So you started doing the roasts about 30 years ago,
something
would you say?
Like that, okay, yeah. Right here
so
in New York.
Late 90s, around that time?
Yeah. Okay. Mid-90s was my first one. I roasted Steven Seagal.
He seems like a blast.
He was not a blast.
He was
I
not.
I don't even think he got the jokes. We had to translate them into Steven Seagal talk.
Makes sense. All right, so from that point to now, it is a different world. And, you know, you could do a roast in 1995. The only people that knew were the ones that were there, and if maybe a critic wrote about it.
Right.
Now, these things are televised, they're filmed, they live forever. How is it, maybe it's not, how is it different for you when you come out of them now and the way they are received?
They're elevated. You know, when I was a young comic, I pushed real hard to get them on TV. The old guard liked it private. The old school comics, they didn't want to be on TV saying curse words. Mm. That was off their brand. And I was young. I was like, this is my brand, but no one's seen it except, you know, local fancy people in New York. And we roasted Boomer once at the Friars Club.
We were there.
And it was a highlight because you get to roast people you grew up watching or you rooted for and you watched win big games growing up here. And like as just a fan of sports and as a fan of popular culture, like I couldn't believe it. Then I was like, wait, everyone should see this. So I really pushed to keep it going. Every time the roast died, I did whatever I could to revive it. And now it's the Super Bowl of comedy. It's the World Cup of comedy because people all over the world are watching it, and now they're live, and now the best comics in the world are stepping up to do these things. And obviously, we called it the Groat Roast, the greatest roast of all time. When Tom signed on, it's elevated to the Forum. I mean, we did it in front of 10,000 fans. Mm. So when we walked out there, it was Gladiator World.
Yeah.
You didn't also just do it in front of 10,000 fans. You did it against people who have legit power.
Yeah.
You know, so it's different. And when you see Dana White in the crowd, when you see some politicians in the crowd, you see people who definitely move things and make things happen. Has there ever been a point in your career where after a roast, you're like, man, I may be done here?
Yeah. I guess a few times, but not on the scale. With the roast that you're talking about, everybody who's invited opts in. Okay. Once they opt in, Willie, they're in. It's like once they volunteer, they kind of know what they're coming for.
So they're fair game.
The real insult would be ignoring them.
Mm.
Like somebody's as made as Robert Kraft or Bill Belichick or, you know, all the guys that were there, Dana White. He came in for rehearsals. He wanted to do well.
So committed.
He wanted to represent his league. He had his best fighter sitting there with him. So it was an opportunity to be part of the fun. And that's what I admire about the people that came in. Not everybody's got thick skin like that. But the people that come into these roasts, they're showing the fans, they're showing the fam that they could are not above criticism, jokes. They could take it. It shows sportsmanship. Mm.
Very interesting. The when you were you started as a comedian though, correct? Not as a roast party.
Yeah, I'm still a comedian.
So still here. I'm in a stand up.
Yeah, of course. Right. No, I get it. It was definitely a pivot.
What was that moment that you changed from stand up comedian to? I mean, you've got to be the most famous roast. There's no one else that I think of
right.
other than you. What was the moment where you went in that direction?
I got asked to do a roast in the mid-90s. They were having a hard time getting people back then, and everybody said it was corny, it was antiquated. And I was like, but I get to meet Milton Berle and Buddy Hackett and Don Rickles. I was like, I'll try that. I didn't care about Steven Seagal, but I wanted to meet the legends, the Mount Rushmore, the comics. So I and you couldn't even look it up back then. There was no Google, YouTube. I had to go to the Museum of Broadcasting, watch these old videos just to see how the game worked, see how far you could go, see what the dais looks like, see what the jokes sounded like, see how people reacted. And right away, I started writing and writing and writing. And then I walked out my first time, and it was one of my first times on stage, not in a comedy club, but in a big ballroom. And the mayor was there, and all these... you know, New York hoity-toity people were there, and these legendary comics and movie stars. And I went up prepared, and I killed, and I was like, this is my Yankee Stadium right here. This is my lane.
Pretty cool.
You obviously, you've cooked up Donald Trump before.
Yeah.
Is there a chance, would you be able to cook him up again?
I'm afraid to get deported.
That's a fair answer.
I like this country. I'm worried.
That's Jeff Ross with us. Tickets on sale, jeffrossbroadway.com. Take a Banana for the Ride starts August 5th with the previews, but opening night August 18th. You mentioned all the legends.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet Jackie Gleason?
I never met Jackie.
He was one you didn't. Okay.
He was slightly before
because he was
time.
Part of those two, right? In that group of older comedians that would get roasted and be part of it.
I don't know. I think he may have been part of that whole Dean Martin era.
Yeah.
But I think he might have been gone by the time I started.
What was your biggest influence, clearly your parents and your grandfather.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it more that or was it more Hollywood and the comedians you're talking about?
You know, I developed my sense of humor early on. I grew up in a catering hall in New Jersey, weddings. And I was the boss's son. Oh, look at that.
Look at the hair.
Yeah, look at that. I had big, beautiful
wow.
hair.
That is unbelievable. That's going to be me soon. I'm going to be going from that to this. Yes. Wow.
Well, it happens to a lot of us.
All of us almost, actually. But anyway, you were saying the catering hall.
Yeah. And the catering hall, I was the boss's son. My dad ran the catering hall, and I was the boss's son. So everybody made fun of me for being the boss's son. And everybody was from different worlds. Like there were the waitresses were all Irish and Scottish, and the guy who made the fruit cups was German, and the guy who made the Jello molds was Hungarian, and Haitian guys ran the kitchen, and I was just the boss's son, and they would all clown on me. I was just some high school kid trying to work, make some money myself, and I learned how to take it. I learned how to dish it out, and I learned how to take it, and it was kind of like my origin story was in this kitchen in the heat for real. You hear that expression, if you can't stand the heat, get out. And that's really what I was living in. And it made me work harder, and I developed thick skin and a sense of humor. And I understood the power of a joke, that it could really like neutralize somebody, enemy, a bully, an opponent. And I kind of took that to college and didn't really understand I was funny. At college in Boston, I didn't understand that comedy was even a thing that somebody could do until way after, when a friend suggested to try it. And then when I tried it, I realized, oh man, this is wild.
Like intoxicating, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to go on every night. I wanted to, being a comic, it's like a backstage pass to the universe. I got to meet the world. I got to go everywhere, and I still do. Sometimes I can't even believe it's real.
You're speaking about comedy as a whole. I've heard recent pushback of comics who do more crowd work than actually prepare a set. are you against comics who stand up there and roast a crowd for an hour and say, all right, thanks for coming out? Or are you like, hey, man, I put in a 9-to-5 and actually put together a set that can kill anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah.
There's a difference from saying you're a comic by just roasting people in the front of you than saying, hey, man, I'm putting on a show and trying to make people laugh.
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm not a hater like that because I also enjoy making fun of the audience, so I'd be a hypocrite.
Sure.
I call it roasting. I'm more formal about it. They have to opt in. I don't just start coming out on people because, I don't know, that's triggering for some people.
Yeah.
But I like that the crowd work comics are kind of embracing the audience. I love the what do you call it, the immersive experience that comedy is now, where you go there, you might be part of the show. And my shows have always been like that. So I just see it as comics catching up to what I've been doing for a long time.
Can you stay for a minute? Can we take a quick break?
Sure, take a break.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with Jeff Ross in just a moment. It's Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on The Fan and CBS Sports Network. Don't go anywhere.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, the guys are out. They'll be back next week. Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo, Built Ford Tough Studio. We'll get back to the calls and all sports in just a few minutes, but a few more minutes with Jeff Ross. He's got
Where does Boomer go for vacation?
Golf course.
Somewhere where there's no sun?
No. No. A lot of sun, a lot of golf, and I would say a lot of privacy.
I guess so.
Is that about right, would you say? That's pretty much it. That's the voice of Jeff Ross. Take a Banana for the Ride is the new Broadway show that will open August 5th with previews, but opening night is actually Monday, August 18th. 8-week run. For tickets, visit jeffrossbroadway.com. I told you when you came in.
8 shows a week, by the way.
That's a lot.
Maybe I could do some training, Willie. I don't know what. I never worked this hard in my life.
I see you two a day? For
sometimes,
a couple days, yeah.
Sometimes.
I mean, I see you smoking a pack of Cools over there. I don't know if it's going to... It's going to hold you back.
That's my candy cigarette.
Oh, not me, baby. I'll smoke, but not cool.
So I said when you walked in, you know, like I said, everybody knows who you are. But when I heard you on the Howard Stern show a couple of weeks ago, I couldn't turn it off. From you talking about your childhood with your parents and your grandfather and then getting into the business. But what really got me was when you told the story about the colonoscopy that you had recently. And when you woke up, you had found out you had colon cancer.
Yeah.
Plus all the loss, the relationship with your sister to me was... It was... How did that change you, that whole experience?
Man, even though it was a fight, it really was a fight. You know, I had a tumor in my colon, and they caught it... They say they caught it early. They caught it not late, but not early. They caught it kind of in between, and that was my fault. My buddy had been hocking me, nagging my text chain for 2 years, go get a colonoscopy. And I was like, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to do the prep. Turns out that's nothing. It was easy. Had a nice nap. Like the cleanse. It was, especially for, I don't know. I just didn't think it was the stuff you can go through in life. That was not a big deal. And I wish I'd done it sooner. So everybody out there, I promise you it's not a big deal. What is a big deal is waiting on it. That was really dumb. It was the biggest mistake of my life. And I had surgery. I had part of my colon taken out, which sounds really drastic, and it is, but our colons are long. They're like the dozens of feet long. So if you take 7 inches out, you're okay.
Right.
And I had to do chemo and all that, and I was really scared. But it's not like when I was a kid and my mom had chemo. We can take it now. It's so much more evolved that I was able to still shoot a Netflix special while it was going on. And,
wow.
And, you know, what I learned more importantly than anything else is the team. It's not just you, it's the whole team. It was my sister, my cousins, my aunts, my family, my neighbors. Pushing me, making me laugh, making me the right types of food, keeping me laughing through it. That was what got me to this place where I'm healthy and I'm on Broadway. It's like you asked me a year ago if I'd be sitting here talking up my Broadway show. It would have been impossible.
Did it almost motivate you to do something else like the Broadway show?
It did, because I'd been working on this when I got diagnosed.
Mm.
And I had to stop all year last year.
Mm.
After the roast, after the Tom Brady roast, I had to check out. I had to stop, and I've never stopped. Hmm. I'm like, go, 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 go. You know, comedy doesn't have seasons. We just go. You know, so comics go until they till they're 90, 100. You know, we don't retire. So when I was like, whoa, is this a forced retirement? What is this? Is like, you know, if I can't perform, who am I?
Well, no, I mean, I listened to that, and it's tough to hear because after the Brady roast, I mean, you couldn't have been hotter than ever, right? Like, you imagine, you talk about Nikki Glaser and the wave she was able to ride after that, and every other comic, even Kill Tony and what he does in his platform, and all these other guys have been able to eat off that one roast.
Yeah.
And now you're sitting here saying, man, when that thing sprung, I had to slow it down from a mental side, because I know we talk about the mental roller coaster comedians go through, right? And obviously they go through a lot of dark alleys. And most comedians, when they like to admit it, or some do, they're dark people, right? Yeah. And the only light they get to shine is through their comedy.
Yeah.
Outside of your sister and your family, was there anything, like for me, just for example, when I was training for the training for the training camp, I went to Arizona. And I went to a labyrinth. I went to a resort, a spiritual resort, and I walked the labyrinth and I met with somebody and I kind of got one with nature. And I felt like that prepared me for the season from a mental and spiritual point, right? And it allowed me kind of not only detox spiritually and mentally, but also kind of welcome in new things, let go of the old and welcome the new. During this process, have you been able to do that?
That's a great question. Very, very elevated question.
A little deep for 8:55 in the morning.
What's the coffee?
You know,
and Al Dukes does it to me for some reason.
I do think we work on our bodies. We want to stay healthy, but our minds sometimes kind of go along for that ride. And now that my body is back together, I am spending time on my brain, my mind, my mood, all that.
Less porn. It helps.
Less porn
helps.
You
gotta detox that.
And the drugs help with that. The painkillers. You're like, all right, maybe I'll just watch a movie right instead tonight. Save some time. But, and now I'm coming around to that part of it where I want to keep my brain healthy and protect myself and understand what I went through so that if it happens to Gannon or if it happens to a buddy, I know how to advise them. I know how to get through it myself. And they kind of go together. You know, it's here that yin-yang, the body and the mind, but now I really see it. Mm. And I don't want to be the preachy guy going, guys, get the colonoscopies, but...
Yeah, people hate those guys.
But...
Until
you need
you're that guy.
Yeah.
But I posted on my text chain a picture of what they took out of me, and all my buddies went and got colonoscopies.
So you saw it?
Yeah.
What did he... Any it roast looked
like
beef
something
lodged?
They
lodged in there.
It looked like a fettuccine Alfredo dipped in a vodka sauce. It looked delicious. 7 inches of my colon.
Ay-ay-ay.
Now I got a semicolon.
Well, it resonated with me because I just had a colonoscopy about 4 or 5 months ago. And same thing like you're talking about. You wake up and the doctor's there and the first thing you think is, what? Wow, that didn't take long, and you're wondering what he's going to say.
Yeah.
I was okay, you weren't, but now you are, and that's good. Keep it light here at the end. So, Jeff Ross, with us just a couple more minutes. Who do you like now? I mean, you've seen everybody. He mentioned Nikki Glaser. Give me a couple of names that in comedy that catch you as the veteran guy.
I love this. I mean, obviously, Nikki conquered that roast. She was brilliant. Anybody who's willing to... Buddy Hackett was my mentor. He used to say, anybody who walks the last 30 feet, you know, that's who he respected. You know, you get a lot of advice in this business from everybody, but there's something, it's just like ball, you know, who suits up and who doesn't? Who walks that last 30 feet from the wings to the microphone? And there's so many funny people now. I love Jessica Curson. She kills me. Tom Popp is crushing it. These guys... Sam Morrell and Mark Norman crack me up. They did my end of the year Netflix special on which you can watch. Mike Lawrence is hilarious. I saw David Tell the other night just crushing it right here at the Comedy Cellar. He tours the world. We did our Bumping Mike special together. Mm-hmm. There's so many funny people right now. I think the world is so spinning off its axis right now.
Is that because of social media and everyone's got a platform and can be discovered almost? Like, is it easier to be found now if you're funny on YouTube and Instagram as opposed to 1995?
It's easier to be found, but it's tougher to stay there. Mm.
Well, yeah. I think to Jerry's point, I look at, you know, you look at Tom Segura, right, yeah. And Bert, like, they're two Bears podcasts, yeah. Right? Like, I'm a big Tom Segura guy. I love Andrew Schultz. I consider him a homie. But some of these guys' platforms have elevated them to the point where you may not go see them live because you listen to them so much on their yeah. podcasts and they're on YouTube platforms.
People are going to see those guys live.
Yeah.
Those guys are playing arenas. And I admire that because they committed to that, their own business, their own podcast, and that made their audience go, oh, I know these guys. They're coming to my town. I got to go see what's up. So I love that. Those guys worked decades to be able to hold an audience, not just on the podcast, but to go out on a random Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 o'clock and hold people for an hour. Mm. A lot of people get, like we were talking about earlier, the crowd work comics, Instagram comics, they get that pop and maybe they sell out once or twice, but that audience might not come back.
Mm.
They might go, oh, that wasn't quite, you know, I was walking my dog late last night and this couple walked by. And they were like, Jeff, we just came from a comedy club and it wasn't good. We just bought tickets to your show. We love your show. And I kind of felt bad for the comics they saw, but also like, yeah, it's because I put
in that work
to make sure it's a great night out. It's not just about the meet and greet and, oh, I saw him or her on YouTube and now I got to see him in person. It's like, not only did I see them, but that was, like, amazing. I never seen my husband laugh that hard. I never saw, you know, my grandma's been sad since the cat died. I never saw her laugh that hard. Like, that's what I'm going for. I want to reboot people's brains when they see me.
And that's a good place to end. The show is called Take a Banana for the Ride. Jeff Ross is the comedian to my right. Previews begin Tuesday, August 5th. Opening night, Monday, August 18th. Limited 8-week engagement at the Nederlander Theater through September 29th. Tickets on sale now. JeffRossBroadway.com. Can't thank you enough for getting up and coming. Appreciate it.
I host a night of comedy for my foundation at the Gotham Comedy Club. So shout out to Steve and Chris Mazzilli, man.
Oh, wow.
I would love to have you.
Come on.
Yeah, come chop it up.
Give you my number, Willie. Yeah. I really enjoyed this conversation.
And you can make as many black jokes as you want.
I got lots of black jokes.
I know you do.
Am I the first person ever to talk up a Broadway show on this station? I might be.
I don't know. We've had a lot of people in over the last 17 years, but perhaps it's possible. Yes.
I love it. I'm finding a new I'm bringing the sports fans to Broadway.
I'm coming to see you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Come say hi backstage.
Of course. As long as you have food.
Always. Dude, I'm a biggie. I'm the only comic that could eat a pastrami sandwich 10 minutes before walking on stage. That's probably what gave me colon cancer.
Good luck with that, and good luck with the show. Thank you very much, Jeff. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Jeff Ross, everybody.